We're just going to go down the table, and again, I'm going to ask each of the panelists to briefly introduce themselves, address those two questions that we all got on email before we arrived, and keep it all within about 5 minutes.
Great. Hello, everybody. Woo! Nervous here. Nico Magallon, good to meet you all. I am here actually on behalf of Eric Upchurch, Chief Visionary of Opportunity, Inc. The project that I'm here to talk to you all about is called Council of Communities. This is the idea that if we come together as a community and center the most impacted and collect voice around how we make sure that the most impacted are supported, we can actually make sure that everybody benefits from making sure that the needs of the most impacted are respected and acted upon. So, in my breakout group, I can't wait to tell you all a little more about Council of Communities as well. Just a little bit about myself. I'm a transplant from Minnesota. I actually came here to UW-Madison. I graduated here in 2013. I was here in 2011, which many of you all were a part of that shared experience at the Capitol, occupying and fighting for the rights of people for unions, making sure our collective bargaining rights are heard and respected as well. That was the event that really thrusted me into activism and getting involved. In that process, I joined the Multicultural Student Coalition on campus, fighting for the rights of students of color and making sure that resources are allocated from student government in an ethical and an integrity-filled manner. That obviously pushed me to actually join student government as well and really be part of that public administration process of making sure that resources get to the most impacted as well. Fast forward, I have some experiences with the Public Defender Office, being a co-director of a student statewide nonprofit organization. And now here I am working with Opportunity Inc. and helping steward in-house projects like Council of Communities, helping support work like Young Gifted and Black Coalition, et cetera, et cetera. The two questions are, could we refresh? What are those two questions again? Yes, let's do that. Thank you all so much.
And the two questions are, there we go. What ideas can you share of how we might unite and build a progressive movement that will shift the political climate of Wisconsin? And what types of help do you need to help build such a unity movement?
Thank you. Appreciate it. I would say a lot of it starts at home. It starts with in the house, the homework that you all do, the community that you all build at home, really examining perceptions and assumptions, and really self-critiquing how our experiences really form our assumptions and our perceptions as well, and trying to really undo those and examine those critically as well. I think that's kind of the internal work and that those work of the heart that we all as individuals need to take upon, especially if we're trying to put ourselves in a position to be able to help the most impacted as well. We have to make sure that we are always checking ourselves and re-examining our assumptions and submitting ourselves to some training and mentorship. That might come from some unlikely sources. I'm 27. I actually learn a lot from young people. I learn a lot from you all as older folks as well. So I would say definitely it starts at home. Again, centering the most impacted in our community. So I think one thing we all need to do is to continuously refresh ourselves on the Race to Equity Report. Have just a show of hands, do you all know what that is or have read it? Great. And I know it's a few years old now, but nothing has really changed, has it? Do you all think that things have really changed since that has been published? So I think it would really be useful and beneficial to continue reading that and seeing those statistics as further motivation for the work that we need to do to help and support the most impacted. So again, for folks who can, using your dollars to actually support Black and Brown-led businesses as well. There's a lot of Black and Brown businesses, even just in this, you know, 5-square-mile area radius as well. So making sure that we're putting our money and making sure that we're helping invest in people of color being entrepreneurs and supporting themselves financially as well. Again, listening to and trusting Black women, listening to and trusting trans people, gender non-binary and gender non-conforming folks as well, and also really listening to and trusting folks on the spectrum of mental health and wellness. And then, again, we have to listen to our Native and Indigenous folks as well. Do you all know that up north right now, the Menominee tribe had just put a lawsuit against the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality so that we can fight the Back 40 mine? Do you all know about that? Good. So we need to make sure we're paying close attention and supporting and moving our bodies to support Native and Indigenous folks as well. Let's see, I'll move on to the second question then, and that is, how we can, what types of help do we need to build such a unity movement? I'll speak on behalf of the Council of Communities. I think there's a lot of areas that we could use some support from you all to really help invigorate and get Council of Communities happening where you are. And so what we've been doing is securing pilot programs. Council of Communities has a three-track process of voicing, informing, and organizing. So collecting the voice of folks and getting the voice of those who are the most impacted. We want to inform and supplement that information and make sure that what folks who are most impacted are talking about is supported with that information as well. And then organizing, actually taking the action steps and building the community around what those demands and needs are from the most impacted as well. So again, we're trying to do different pilot programs. One of them right now, we're actually in the housing cooperatives in MCC and trying to figure out what does it look like to actually collect the voice of people who live in the housing cooperatives and centering those who are most impacted, especially those who are marginalized or underrepresented in the co-op community. So getting some help from you all in figuring out what other communities are you all a part of that could maybe use this three-track process as well. Looks like I'm running out of time. I better pass the mic. In my breakout, I look forward to talking to you all a little more about Council of Communities. Thank you all so much for your time.
Good evening. Thank you for having me. My name is David Liners. I'm the state coordinator for Wisdom, which is a network of primarily faith-based organizations, not exclusively. That work around the state. Moses is the local group here in Madison. We work on a variety of issues with a variety of folks. Probably the thing we're best known for around the state is kind of working on criminal justice reform issues. But we also do a lot of stuff. We actually have an organizer on the Menominee Reservation and kind of very involved up there, as well as one in Oneida and Stockbridge Muncie. And then we also have another organization within our organization called Expo. James Morgan's here someplace, that is formerly incarcerated folks. They're actually in the process of voting what exactly Expo stands for. There's a big one of the things we try and be very careful about is language. So originally it was ex-prisoners organizing, and then there was a big conversation about whether ex-prisoner is a pejorative or not. So they're actually in the midst of actually changing the name. They're going to keep it as Expo. But anyhow, in community organizing, we kind of live by a lot of aphorisms. Start on time and end on time and no permanent friends and no permanent enemies and all kind of stuff like that. But one of them is that tension is good. That we kind of always try and keep reminding ourselves, reminding others, tension is good because nothing moves unless there's tension. That's right. And it's also good to kind of hold things in tension. Like that's where creativity happens. So what I always kind of want to talk about is some things that are almost kind of contradictory, but kind of the tension that I think we live with in trying to build a movement. The one is we definitely have to have a big vision. We actually have to have a vision of radical inclusion. We have to have a vision of, you know, of justice. We have where everybody's involved and nobody is left out. At the same time, I think we have to be careful as progressives that we don't keep voting each other off the island. You know, that we don't keep giving each other purity tests. I think we hurt ourselves a lot when we do that. We have to find a way to have a big vision, to have a bold vision, this is where we want to go. We're not going to pretend that we only want some little reforms around the edges. But at the same time, we have to be sure that we're not getting so idealistic that we actually rob ourselves of kind of the connection to people who maybe aren't quite there yet, people who are partway there. We need to help those folks take another step, not yell at them because they haven't taken the step we've taken. So I think living in that tension, I think in sometimes the progressive movement, we settle for a little bit, and we take little victories because they're so hard to come by, and we act as if that's all we were looking for. We have to not do that, but at the same time, we have to not become exclusive ourselves. I'm so radically inclusionary that I exclude everybody who doesn't believe what I believe. You know, we have to be careful about that. Another thing, I really do want to lift up criminal justice reform. I was actually a little sad when I saw the form there that they passed out that's not one of the issues you can check. on this sheet. So I would encourage you to put that under other. I honestly think that our criminal justice system is, it's kind of the logical conclusion of all the other injustices in our system. I think you take all the things that are wrong with our systemic racism and our economic inequities, and you just magnify it and you get the prison system. And then what's just wild to me is within the prison system, you can magnify it again and you get solitary confinement. You know, that the dehumanizing of people, and it really reaches its conclusion there. And what I want to talk about with criminal justice is I want to talk a little bit about some of our learning curve. We started off thinking, well, let's aim for stuff that everybody can agree with, you know, treatment alternatives and diversions for nonviolent drug offenders. Like, everybody's good with that. And nowadays that actually is. Everybody is kind of good with that. We haven't really actually put the money behind it yet, but everybody's in agreement. But we realize, you know, we're not really dealing with this issue until we actually can deal with the sex offenders, until we can deal with the murderers, until we can deal with people who've been in prison for 25 years that maybe did something really horrible 25 years ago, but they were 18 and now they're in their 40s. There's a whole lot of people who are very easily forgotten in the system. I think we need to actually take on the difficult things. We need to actually... We actually need to actually stand for compassion for people that it's hard sometimes to feel compassionate about, at least as a class. As individuals, it's different than when you're dealing with people as a class. But I think we need to actually look at some of those very difficult things. We need to look at some of these extraordinarily long sentences. We need to look at the conditions of confinement in our prisons. I think we need, that's an area that I think if we can fix that, we can actually kind of start back out. The other thing I would just say, and I don't think I need to say it to this group, but I think as progressives, we have to stay focused also on race issues and issues of people in poverty. I think it's very easy to look for hot button issues that are elsewhere where we think we can build a majority, but I think we have to always stay keep those focuses.
Thank you. I'm Don Ferber. I volunteer with the Sierra Club and 350 Madison in particular, and I'm here to talk about the environment. One of the things for me is I like to try to look, if you're going to look at solving problems, you should really finding solutions, you should really look at the root of the problems, and so I'm going to try to address that a bit. Because it may sound surprising, but we talk about there are environmental problems. Well, the environment doesn't have a problem. The planet's going to go on. It's our problem and what we're doing. We have a problem with how the environment is moving in terms of our living here on this planet. One of our great environmental heroes, John Muir, said something, I'm paraphrasing, but that when you tug on one thing in the universe, you find it's connected to everything else. And I think that's a key lesson we need to be thinking about. That in thinking back about how we interact with the environment, looking back in history, you go way back, and we were sort of at the mercy of the planet. We weren't having much impact on the planet. It was more that we had to try to get by as best we can, to try to survive and live. That's changed. We're now having a tremendous impact on the planet. To a good extent, it is at our mercy, because we are treating the planet as if it is an infinite resource, and it is not. And for a long time, we haven't had to deal with that. Now we're starting to, but the point is, our mentality has not switched. We're still acting in the same way as if we can continue extracting as much as we want. Some things, I think with science, we can find new ways, like of energy and so on, like we're doing, but the mentality of taking and taking and not living in concert is a huge problem that we have to deal with. And the problem is a lot in terms of then what's happening with other people. Another thing is that really what we've gotten to in terms of how we interact with other people. Used to be when you wanted to get a service from somebody else, you would just barter, exchange, it was direct contact. Now we've got money as an interchange medium, and money has no values of its own. People used to connect to each other. Now they're not. And the more money you have, the more of that interchange mechanism, the more control you can have over that world. That's allowed us to shift in terms of our values to where both the planet and the people are simply inputs to getting more of that exchange mechanism. And it will be abusing a lot of both in order to get more of that money, which does not relate to anything in terms of the environment or anything else. A dollar is just as good to purchase food as it is to go towards the purses of a yacht. It doesn't care. But we're not doing things any differently. And I think that's a key thing we need to take a look at. Does anybody know the cost of a gallon of gasoline? I'm hearing numbers here which have to do with the price. That's not the cost. We only take into account the cost of the inputs, and as much as we can lower those, that's what we do. The outputs, as long as you can externalize them, by the way, all you then become externalities, as is the planet much of the time, to many people who are making money, don't count. So one of the things is we need to start true costing what we do. We need to realize we're not living on a finite world. Another thing is, because this is about people, it's not about the environment. The way we connect each other is through our emotions and our stories. And when we talk about environmental problems, I for years was guilty as an environmentalist about going out there and giving them facts and figures. For some strange reason, that didn't connect with a lot of people and still doesn't. But you can tell the stories of how these things impact you. And that's a key part of, I think, what we need to do to make a difference. I'll quit there. Thank you.
I'm Linda Ketchum. I'm the executive director of Madison Area Urban Ministry. And one of the advantages to being toward the middle is a lot of things have already been said that I can just say yes. And I will, one of the things that Mom has been involved in over our 45-year history has been to be an incubator and place where new ideas can grow. And we are the incubator, for example, for the Allied Drive Neighborhood Association, Street Pulse Homeless Cooperative Newspaper, and a number of other organizations. And the beauty of those, of being that incubator, is that it brings us into proximity on a daily basis with people who are dealing with very, very basic human needs. And David mentioned in terms of the criminal justice system work that they do and at Wisdom and the advocacy work, and Mom does some advocacy work around issues in the criminal justice system as well, and how we landed on that. My predecessor's over here, Mary Kay Baum, with a phone taking video. And correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the things that, because our history had been to spin off organizations when once they were kind of ready to go on their own, but in the mid-90s with the Justice Issues Task Force that Mom had created and looked at reentry and what we were doing in prisons, and just as David said, we realized that that was where all of the issues, the other issues we had been working on for 20-some years converged. And so we began really focusing on that. We also began focusing on providing a support network for people returning from prison. And in 2007, we voted to not spin the programs that we had that supported people and worked with people coming home from prison off, because we didn't want to lose that proximity. We didn't want to lose their voices in our ear telling us what was going on, because that's what was informing our advocacy and making us more effective. So I think it's important to have that proximity. I think that's one of the things I wanted to say. I think it's important to recognize that politics are also local. So we, especially in Madison and Dane County, my sense has been and my experience has been that we like to focus on the uprising and what's happening in the Capitol building, but right here at city and local government, we're passing ordinances that ticket people who are homeless and have no legal place to sleep for having no legal place to sleep, and we're letting that go. that affects the criminal justice system at the state level. So I want to encourage us as we build a movement and as we work on issues at various groups to not forget that politics is very local. Our county's going to spend, just voted to borrow $76 million to build a jail. $25 million could fix the problems in the existing jail. But we're going to borrow $76 million and pay another $30 million in interest to pay it off. And that's why we joined the Derail the Jail Coalition at MOM. So remember, these issues, they're not just the governor. They're your county elections. They're your city elections. They're your school board elections. And when we talk about people who we've sent to prison and people who we're putting on supervision, their children have lost their voice in school board elections. We, who are not on supervision, are the voice of children, disproportionately children of color, who have parents that we've locked away. White people need to shut up. This is one of my insights. To be quiet and to listen. And to work on our own internalized white supremacy and racism and white privilege. We have to ask people, what are you experiencing? Not what do you need? What are you experiencing, and how might I work with you to help move something forward? I think we also need to talk to groups that are already doing some of this organizing around the state and not reinvent the wheel, so that we're working in collaboration versus silos. And what types of help do you need to build such a unity movement? I kind of went back to a very personal level, and I need to continue to work on me, and it was already mentioned. I mean, we need to do our own internal work before we're ready to start saying, yes, I think this is the answer.
Thanks. I'm Nate Tim from, I'm representing Wisconsin Grassroots Network this evening primarily. And I'm also happen to be chair of the Rural Caucus. And I'm going to start with a little survey. How many of you in your lifetime were born or raised in a, I'm going to say farm. Let's start with farm. Okay? That's pretty interesting. My second question is, how many of you are card-carrying members of the Democratic Party? Okay? Very interesting. So what I'm going to talk to you about is the issue of organizing, particularly from a rural perspective, because Wisconsin Grassroots Network has, from its inception, been committed to community-based organizing. And it's easy to talk about organizing, but it's one heck of a tough job to do, as probably all of you have found out. Still, I don't think there's any more critical thing for us to be mindful of. And when I talk about organizing, I'm not talking about campaign-style organizing. That's a part of it. But that's not the primary part. To me, the primary part for us, this is what I have learned, and I think maybe some of you have learned the same thing, that if you just focus on election cycles, then you really miss a whole lot of other cycles. And so we need to think about what is the work that we need to do in between those campaign cycles that will advantage us in terms of dealing with all of the kinds of issues that I've heard my friends talk about here, because all of those issues are somehow impacted by political and governmental power. And that's something that we sometimes, I think, as progressives, kind of want to wash our hands of. God, that power idea, it's kind of a scary thing, power. But power can be used for good or for ill. It's just sort of a, you know, neutral quantity out there. And we have in the current environment, seeing how really what a risky state of affairs we're in right now, I really shudder to think about what could happen, you know, with the council, the general counsel that's investigating right now, and what would happen, you know, if the Congress chooses not to accept his recommendations. Should he make some recommendations about replacement of the president? I shudder to think about what a military option might be in this country. I, like many of you, have studied the transitions that have gone on in other places in the world historically, and they didn't see them coming. So that's all scary to me, and probably to you. So how do we immunize ourselves? Maybe we get by this time, but how do we immunize ourselves in the future from a dilution and a decimation of American democracy? We have to be engaged, right? There's no substitute for being engaged. And unfortunately, sometimes as progressives, we get so wrapped up in our issues that we forget about some of our fundamental values, which are things like our democratic institutions. And if we don't protect those democratic institutions, all is lost. All is lost. The citizens of the Third Reich did not have an option after the takeover. They did not have an option. So, in terms of how does this relate to rural Wisconsin? Well, a lot of elections have been lost in rural Wisconsin. So we need to think about how to organize and how to engage in rural Wisconsin. And folks in Dane County need to figure out how to form partnerships to make that transition effective. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Brandy Grayson. I think most of you know me, so I won't recap really who I am. But the thing, my main focus right now in my life is taking care of me. So I do a lot of exercising now, a lot of yoga. I also have this organization called Ladies of Boss, which is a Black-only social space where we create safe spaces for Black people. Sorry, white people, you can't come. And I work with a few other organizations and advocacy and just trying to, you know, be well. Because as a lot of people have already pointed out, our work really begins with ourselves on an individual level. I'm going to say some things that's going to not feel good to most of you because you're mostly white. So some of the things that I'm going to say is going to make you uncomfortable. I hear everyone talk about the criminal justice system, reform, democratic institutions, the need for values, and how to work together in a revolutionary way while being inclusive without being exclusive, right? And as a Black woman, when white people say inclusive, it usually means exclusive. I just want y'all to know that. It just is what it fundamentally has come to mean, right? We have to somehow figure out a way to accept who we are, right? We have to figure out a way to accept who we are. America is built on white supremacy, patriarchal capitalism. That is who we are. That is how we operate. That's why our environment is going to hell. That's why we can invest $76 million in a jail and pay someone $40 million in interest for that job, that jail. It's also why Governor Scott Walker can say, hey, I have a great idea for you poor people. I'm going to give you guys a tax credit, $100 per child, which is going to cost us $122 million, right? That kind of thought process is disconnected from the people who are actually surviving oppressive systems, right? $120 million. Imagine what we could do with $120 million if we invested in our children in education and resources and opportunities and trainings and jobs and facilities and all that good stuff, mental wellness stuff, you know, things that people actually need, things that actually invest in people's souls and their bodies to do that work we were just talking about on this panel, right? That some people don't have the privilege of doing, right? Because they work a 9 to 5, a 7 and 11, get up, do A, B, and C again, and we start all over again, right? People don't have the privilege. Like, I live in this ball of privilege. I can do yoga every day, y'all. Every day I do yoga. And it's not because, it's because I have people like you who take care of me. And that's the honest to God truth. Madison Community takes care of Brandy Grayson. So I can sit at home with my beautiful son and the beautiful other children that I take in my home because you take care of me. So I say that to say, if we're going to actually do what we are considering to do up on this panel and in this room with all you beautiful white folks and some brown folks scattered about, we have to be willing to accept and acknowledge who we are. America is white supremacy, which means that every institution is founded in it. It is the root of every institution, whether we're talking about democracy, whether we're talking about our political system, the way that we vote, the way that electors work, right? The way that city council in Madison, Wisconsin works, right? Because I see a couple city council people up here, a county board people. We operate very racist, right? And we don't really care. We don't really do anything about it. Black people like me stand up and I'm loud and I call y'all out on your racistness. And then you frown and you look the other way and say, isn't she a bitter, angry black woman, right? But instead of looking at, as Linda said, looking at what's being said in the experience that exists outside of your experience, it's easy for us to say, you know, Brandy, if you could just calm down just a little bit, if you could just be a little bit less emotional, if you could be a little less passionate and angry, then we might be able to hear you. I want you white people to know that's called tone policing. You do not get to set the framework on my pain, my anger, and or how I demonstrate my emotions. And I know that's really hard to accept and feel when you're used to controlling your environment, right? When you're used to moving in a way that stops people from impacting you in a negative way. When you get uncomfortable, you leave the space because you have the power and autonomy to do that. And I hear people say progressive. I'm not sure what progressive really means. I don't know what progressive really means to white people. I don't. I don't really know what a movement means when it's a room full of white people when you're talking about revolution. I don't. I get confused a little bit because in my mind, in order for us to have a movement that's inclusive without being exclusive, we actually have to have a movement that's centered around intersectionality. So I have to go. And intersectionality means that we put those centered in this, we put those who are the most impacted in the center. We center them, whether they're trans women, right? Whether they're black women, right? Whether they're immigrants, right? Whether they're queer. We actually center those who are the most disenfranchised, marginalized, and vulnerable to white supremacy, patriarchal capitalism. And that is how we're going to move if we're going to have a real revolutionary movement. And I know that's hard. Y'all all looking at me crazy. Some people looking at me like, why don't you stop talking? White supremacy racism has to be dealt with. It's in your education, it's in the health system, it's in the environment. It leads to the continuous investment in things that are killing Mother Earth, leading to the killing of physical bodies, with black and brown people being at the forefront of that destruction. If you don't see that the liberation of black and brown people is the most important aspect and the thing that all of us should be focused on for our own liberation, then we ain't getting it. Thank you.
This, I think, is the second time that I've followed Brandy on a stage. And it's impossible. I don't mean to make light of it at all, but it is impossible. And in a way, it's lucky because the notes that I made are very, very different, coming from a different angle of what Brandy has been talking about, which probably is, not probably, but is fundamental to what we need to be thinking about. First of all, my name is not Kevin Gundlach. Many of you know Kevin. He's the president of the South Central Federation of Labor. My name is David Newby. I was president of that organization back in the early 1980s. Started out in the civil rights movement in the South, went on to the anti-war movement, meaning Vietnam. We have to remember all the various wars we've been anti. But spent most of my life in the labor movement, both here locally and at the state level. Let me talk in a much more pragmatic, in a way, institutional perspective in terms of the questions that have been put to us tonight. In terms of barriers to progressive unity, and I won't, Brandy, try to define that. But I think we all recognize that, you know, we have been put either by history or law in this country into silos. And the question is, how many silos can we have? How many groups, how many niches, each of them competing for money and members and time? And how does that make us weaker rather than stronger? Secondly, there are legal barriers that, in terms of institutions, some groups in this that you might identify with in this room can get involved in electoral politics. Others legally cannot. We can all be involved in issues, and that's something we all have to remember. But let me suggest that what we need is, first of all, consolidation wherever it's possible in order to make bigger silos first. Secondly, we need umbrella groups for coordination in order to eliminate and reduce overlap and competition for scarce resources. And that's one reason, actually, that I've been involved very much in our revolution and here in the state, our Wisconsin revolution, our Wisconsin Dane County, because it is an umbrella group that encompasses, basically, it aspires to encompass the issues that are represented in this room, but it is not a political party per se, even though it does engage in politics. And trying to move the politics of this city, this county, this state, and this nation to the left. Thirdly, we need at least communication between groups and ultimately, hopefully, umbrella groups before there's consolidation. But in the meantime, narrower groups that have shared interests. The goal I would see, personally, given the restrictions that we have and that are very difficult to break out of, and again, both historical and legal, would be to have two umbrella groups, one which is essentially issue-based and not involved directly in political in the political process, and a second umbrella group which does get involved in the political process, which does not mean, like with OWR, that it is not involved in issues and organizing around issues and supporting each other with regard to issues. But to get the kind of vigorous communication and coordination that we need in order to take power, and power is ultimately what it's all about. If we don't change the power structure in this country, we're not going to change the things that each of us want passionately to change. For the second question, what do we need, and I'm thinking here of labor, in order to build towards this brighter and more powerful progressive future that I'm thinking of? It's very interesting that the countries with the highest rates of unionization have more of what we all want. And those countries are Denmark, Norway, Switzerland, Netherlands, and Sweden. Switzerland has the lowest rate of unionization at 51%. Sweden has 88%. Those countries have the highest income per capita, healthy life expectancy, having someone to count on, perceived freedom to make life choices, freedom from corruption and generosity. They compared to the United States, which ranks 17th on this happiness index. Labor already works with a lot of community groups and essentially with many, if not all, of the groups that are represented in this room. Economic development groups, jobs, anti-discrimination, diversity, healthcare, international trade, immigration, and so forth. What the labor movement needs from our partner organizations is help in organizing. In order to get from the 11% of workers who are organized in this country up to at least the level of Switzerland, which has 51, if not Sweden, which has 88. We need that help if we are going to take power for progressives in this country. Thank you.
I'm Will Williams from Vets for Peace, and what an act to follow with all the previous speakers. Vets for Peace believe that violence is not a means of settling differences throughout the world. So I'll speak to that. Because by committing that violence throughout the world, the military also have the largest footprint against the environment. One of the problems I see and that I've seen for my 74 years on this earth is that we're uneducated when it comes to understanding how and why this country came to be. We live in a predatory capitalist society. And in order for it to continue, there must be a divide among people, whether it's on race, economic, gender, or whatever. It's necessary for this system to continue the way it is. We are too easy to discount a person because of who they are, whether it's by religion or whatever. If we want to do something, I won't say progressive because I don't fully understand what it means either. But if we want to do something, we will begin to educate ourselves to truth and reality of what's happening in this country called the United States of America. It was founded as the way Brandy spoke of. And people do run from the subject when you talk about racism. There has not been a real discussion about that issue since the country was founded. When people in power are in a position or have the microphone where they can touch millions throughout this country and the world, they're shut down, as Colin Kaepernick was. So how could we expect to change something when we teach our children all of this bullshit from the time they get old enough to begin to learn, and they hear it year after year, and even the old people support it? How many people have relatives in the military or that have served? It's nothing wrong with that. I served myself. But when you believe that when a child come in this world, they owe this country something in order to be patriotic, you must go and fight to protect the Constitution or the security of the country, which this country's wars have never been about. Not even the so-called Great War. It was not about that. Had it been so, the United States wouldn't have waited until the bombing of Pearl Harbor to get involved. So if we think we can sit back and continue to put politicians in office at any level, whether it's in the city, county, state, or whatever, but if you put them in and don't hold them accountable, they're not worth having in office. So to think that because we get a swing in this election, maybe, that it's going to change something, it ain't going to change nothing. Because you've got people in there that's been put in year after year that go along with the capitalistic ideas that oppresses every one of us in here. Until we come to the realization that this country and the way it operates is a country with have and have nots. And as long as the have nots are ignorant to the fact that they are merely a tool in the toolbox of this oppressive government, until they realize, as the great chief Tecumseh said, that a twig will break, but a bundle is strong. That's what's got to bring us together. Whatever our issues are, we have to come together, talk about it, iron them out, and move forward in solidarity to change what need to be changed in this country if we are to move forward as a people in harmony, peace, and love. Thank you.